Today, New York is the subject of a different kind of chronicle. In the minds of many people, the city came out of the closet in 1969 when police raided the Stonewall Bar and a riot ensued. But librettist Michael Corey discovered a rich history dating back at least 70 years before that. A Gay Century Songbook commemorates the history of gay life in New York. It's now out on a CD recorded by the New York City Gay Men's Chorus. From member station WNYC, Andrea Bernstein has the story.
32 Cooper Square, down on the Bowery next to the offices of the Village Voice, doesn't look like much. It's a plain, brick-colored, six-story building with a fading sign that cryptically says Martucci Enterprises.
It just seems very odd to me that no one knows the history of this place. They just pass it every day.
Have you ever been inside?
No, I haven't. You want to try going in?
Beyond a thick metal door lies a deep, deep room filled with newspaper production machinery and stacked copies of The Voice. But when Michael Corey looks inside, he sees Paresis Hall. Paresis Hall, named for a late stage of syphilis, was a so-called fairy resort where gay identity began to emerge in New York, according to historian Daniel Hurwitz.
The Bowery around the turn of the century was really a site of working class pleasures. The elevated train used to run down there, and so it was an area where working class men predominantly went out after work to saloons, to burlesque theater. Paresis Hall was a place where working class men who really identified more with their masculinity than with their homosexuality, mingled with men who put on some makeup, put on some rouge, maybe dressed up much more as women.
Is he one for quoting Swinburne? Does he follow the ballet? Does the David make his skin burn? He's that way. Down at Coney, on the stony beach where muscle men bake ground. If the lifeguards are looking, do they all swim out to drown? I'm safe!
And Paresis Hall in 1914 is the setting of the song That Way, about the confusion a woman looking for a husband might feel if she happened to stumble into the wrong Bowery bar. Corey first found out about Paresis Hall and other gay locales while researching his opera Harvey Milk. When the gay chorus asked him to write a new work, he hooked up with composer Larry Grossman. Then Corey got on the subway and visited sites with a gay history most people have forgotten about.
It totally conflicts with what is the accepted lore of gay history in New York, which is basically that gays lived in an unhappy dark closet, gays and lesbians, until 1969. When some young drag queens threw bricks and bottles and a revolution began.
A little further up the east side from the Bowery at Gramercy Park, nannies perch on benches rocking strollers while an elderly gentleman reads a newspaper. Unlike the other spots memorialized in the song cycle, Gramercy Park wasn't a known lesbian gathering place. But in the early 1900s, this area was the center of the movement to earn women the right to vote. And with a little poetic license, Corey envisioned what we now call lesbian couples strolling here in the year 1910. Elsie DeWolfe and her lover Miss Marbury, the novelist Willa Cather and her lover Edith Lewis.
And all these distinguished, educated women who had been part of the suffragette movement in one way or another, and because of their social standing and money, managed to live quite comfortably. Well, Boston marriage was a term invented actually by Henry James in his book, The Bostonians. It was the polite euphemism the society used for two women who were living together.
And it's not a passing lark. It's a dear little Boston marriage in Gramercy Park.
There were many other gathering spots for gay New Yorkers. The Julius Tavern in the West Village, still in business, became known as a gay watering hole after World War I. The Ariston Apartment Hotel, once at 55th and Broadway, housed the Ariston Baths. But one of the most popular spots was way uptown at 155th Street and Frederick Douglass Boulevard.
What was the place called? Hamilton Lodge. And in the 1920s, it was, I think it was an Odd Fellows Hall that was used for this humongous drag ball called the Hamilton Hall Drag Ball. And it was a major event covered by all the daily newspapers and magazines in the 20s. They had major celebrities attending this from Hollywood, Gloria Swanson, Ma Rainey, and these guys would do this incredible Paris-inspired drag. And there were hundreds of drag contestants at the Hamilton Hall Drag Ball. And it was right there where that parking lot is.
Even though Hamilton Lodge is gone, Corey looked across the street, saw a fruit store, and came up with the idea for a song.
I was thinking of the clerk working in that fruit store, watching all the swells and elegant drags driving up in limos with their rich boyfriends, thinking what a glamorous life that must be. And so I sort of came up with a Cinderella story about this fruit store clerk who dresses himself as a Sister Hallelujah and enters the contest.
You got the dime store prayer beads. You got that rhinestone cross. To win the Harlem drag ball, girl, you gotta ask the boss.
But the setting is the 1930s. Moralism is on the rise, and the ball is raided by the police.
After Sister Hallie is released from jail, she stumbles home, gets high on some drugs, and falls asleep, and her makeup stains her pillow.
Sister Hallelujah, after the costume show, why are you on the corner? Where did you score that blow?
The song, Corey says, sums up the way he feels about the early gay history of New York.
And it's both fun and sad, which to me kind of is this parking lot. It was fun knowing that it was here, and it's sad that much of our history is lost.
For NPR News, I'm Andrea Bernstein in New York.